The title of the talk tonight is Love Overcoming Resistance. Metta, or love, or friendliness, is one of four movements of the heart in the Buddhist tradition, which are called the Brahma Viharas. And the Brahma Viharas are translated as kind of palaces of Brahma. Brahma is the fundamental Indian culture god, but it's kind of, because Brahma is not such a specific god in Hindu mythology as Shiva or Vishnu or Ganesh. Brahma is really the godness, or the god quality behind all the gods. And so Brahma Vihara simply means living in godness, or the kingdom of God in the Christian language, or living with liberation. And the quality of these four is that they are unmeasurable. They're called measurable. You can't measure them. And if you think about it, you really can't measure love. It just doesn't lend itself to measurement. True, it comes and goes, it can be contracted, it can be expanded, but it's not measurable by mind. So all the four are called the immeasurable, they're not available for measuring. They're beyond, in other words, boundaries the mind is used to measuring the world, like how am I compared to somebody else? Sort of measuring, or am I doing well, am I good, am I not good, and whatever. Where is my boundary? Over there, over there. Where is boundary? Is measuring. So the Brahma Viharas are four immeasurables. The first is metta, or friendliness. And the second is karuna, or compassion. Compassion is seen as the primary Buddhist practice in the Mahayana Tibetan tradition. It's become the number one practice because it's immeasurable, because compassion is the movement of the heart and the mind that goes beyond all boundaries. And all Dharma practice and all, you know, genuine spiritual practice is about going beyond the limits of self. Doesn't matter whether you're a Kabbalah practitioner, you're going up the Esser Sfirot, the ten Sfirot, to unlimited, to the beyond, Keter, unmeasurable. So the compassion is one of the main practices in Dharma, in the Buddhist world, and especially in the Mahayana tradition. Karuna means compassion, but it is active, and it relates to pain and suffering. Whereas metta tends to be just friendliness to everything, karuna tends to be the way the heart is touched by pain and difficulty, in which is all living beings are struggling to live, and so suffering is and pain is a part of the experience of all living beings, whether they're a human being or an ant. And so compassion is available all the time as our sympathetic relationship with difficulty. In the early Buddhist tradition, it's described as another word, which is the quivering of the heart, the trembling of the heart, when the heart is touched. The heart is shaking with the cry of the world. It's the way the Buddha has long ears. You know, sort of all these icons of the Buddha with long ears. It's because he's compassionate. He's listening to the cry of all beings. He understands it. He's with it. So compassionate heart is about deeply responding, listening, and quivering of our heart with all the cries of the world, and of course of ourselves. Mudita is the third one, and it means gentle joy, just soft joy. It's not ecstatic joy, it's not being totally blissed out, although that's very nice. But it's gentle joy, it's a sustaining joy, a joy that is not, again, measurable or limited to just a happy, blissful experience that afterwards disappears again. It's a joy that is sustained and sustainable and endless, and therefore it's a gentle joy which can be with us all our life and is not cannot be stolen by difficult experiences. Immeasurable joy. Joy with all other joy in the world. It's really close to just dancing with life. Joy with the dance of life, say. Because life is dance and play. And so it's the joy that comes with that. Joy of kids when they're playing. And then the compassion when they start hitting each other. And the fourth is equanimity or upekkha, and this is a sort of ground of all of them, and also the culmination, meaning the fruition. I don't know how to say it in Hebrew. Culmination, the kind of end of the road of all of them together, leads to equanimity, and equanimity is a deep sense of balance. A deep sense of holding all the contrasts and holding all the plus and the minus and holding all the pain and the pleasure and holding with awareness and with not switching off, being right in the middle of the experience of being embodied in a body in this world, being right in the middle of all of that and yet being in balance. The kind of the eye of the storm, Aina Sera. That's equanimity. Shivyon Nefesh, I didn't know, a few ways to describe it in Hebrew. And it comes from the English word equal. It's sort of just, you know, you're not knocked over. You can be touched, of course, all the time, but you're never destroyed. There's always a balance, that you're always balanced. So these are the four Brahma Viharas, and a couple of stories just come to mind to remind me or to that remind me about the endlessness or the beyond boundary of these qualities. And one of them is actually a Palestinian woman called Rauda, that we used to work with a lot, and she's still a very close friend. And she was in Israeli prison for 10 years. And she, because her boyfriend at that time was wanted and on the run. And she, when I first met her, she said, I spent 10 years in prison and I did one thing. I made sure that there wasn't one grain of hate in my heart. That's what I worked on at for 10 years in prison, that there would not be one slight tiny grain of hate in my heart. And because clearly, she came to it because she knew that if she had hate in her heart, it would just damage her. So she came to it from that place, but she became a real, I would say, spiritual teacher and a wonderful a woman and a peacemaker. And Christopher and I and many others have worked with her for years and years. So that's an example of the boundariness, the beyond the usual boundary. And another that comes to mind is that from the Dalai Lama's tradition, actually his doctor. And his doctor at one point was touring the world and went to England and gave talks there, and I was really struck by what he had to say. He was in prison in Tibet, and he was constantly tortured by in the prison by the Chinese. And he actually came to England and he brought the torture instruments that they used against him for 20 years till they let him out. And he said, there was only one time when I felt that I lost my hope and I lost my Dharma. And that is a period when I didn't have compassion on the people torturing me. And at that point I felt my Dharma collapsed, but it came back. It's extraordinary. Just, you know, you can hardly imagine such compassion. That he was being tortured in Inuim for 20 years, and the only time he felt down was when he wasn't, there was a period when he lost compassion for the people torturing him. So what we've been doing here is starting with some very simple feelings that remind us of love and in a way of compassion. We started simply with appreciation, haracha or ukara. We started with just appreciation, just a sense of, okay, I'm here. It's good. I'm soft with myself. I'm kind to myself. I appreciate my life. Very simple. Not a big story. Not high in the sky. But persistent. We kept going. And we will keep going with it. So all of this will start with those kind of simple emotions that are everyday emotions like gratitude. Akaratoda. It's simple. We feel gratitude to people that give us something, and so it's, we have it. So we start with those simple emotions, and they remind the heart in a way. They kind of, it's like training the muscle of the heart, shrir shel halev. It's like exercising the shrir, which, because so often we end up as an adult closed down. We close the heart because of all the wounds that we suffer and all the difficulties we had to face, and we struggle, you know. When I hear the stories of people working in daily life in Tel Aviv in companies or in high tech, or the intensity of the life and the craziness of the life and they get shut down. And there is a sense of anesthesia or sort of ardama klali, general anesthesia. So we really do need to wake the heart up. And it's not just people who work in the high-tech industry in Tel Aviv. Many of us, all of us perhaps, feel that we close our heart because of wounds that we've suffered in our life. And then it's difficult for us to touch the heart. And even these words that I'm saying, you know, and that we say to ourselves of kindness and friendliness, and think, oh, what's that stuff? I don't feel any of that. It's like all this touchy-feely stuff. I don't feel it. You know, and so we start with things that we often do feel and we can feel. But and this is what we actually started to do here. We, in a slow way, we touch appreciation, we do it again, we started to use phrases already. We, even without the phrases, instead of giving ourselves a hard time, we use attitude of kindness to ourselves, some kind of chibuk, hug ourselves because we're worth it, because we're precious. Nice, giving you a hug. It's this kind of feeling that is waking the heart muscle. And it's not about being nice. It's not sentimental. And it is important to understand that, because a little bit, even when I listen to the words, they can sound a little bit narcissistic. You know, narcissism. Like being good to me, and I'm satisfied and happy, and I must be nice to myself and kind to myself, and I'll have extra, you know, jam on my bread, and yeah, it kind of there's something in it that can also be a bit sentimental, and it's one of the places that it can go, which are called the near enemy. Well, so all of the four Brahma Viharas have a near enemy, and so, for example, metta, or loving kindness, or friendliness, the near enemy is sentimentality, to be you know, everything in pink colored glasses and narcissistic and indulging ourselves and thinking that's metta. The near enemy of compassion, by the way, is pity, not the other one, not chemla, rachamim, ken. And I'll mention that again later. The near enemy of mudita is going to be ecstasy and states of getting yourself high. The far enemy of metta, of course, is hate. The far enemy of love is hate. Well, that's obvious. Don't need to talk about that. The near enemy is a little bit more subtle. So we gradually remind our heart. That's what we're doing, starting with simple things like appreciation. But as I say, we can't really control things. And the image of the cool water on the hot plate, which goes psh, you know, reacts. And in a way, we're not only touching the heart, we're actually irritating the heart. The heart actually is being a bit irritated, pushing a little bit the heart muscles. You know, yeah. Wake up, heart. And when you irritate the heart, all the voices of the heart can turn up. And we may find jealousy, anger, irritation. Maybe this is too early in the retreat. So maybe this is a form of warning beforehand rather than a sympathetic voice afterwards. But just, and of course, maybe it doesn't happen. Then who knows what will happen? You can't control. So maybe, maybe not. But just be aware that it's part of the process of irritating girua, giruim, or girudim of the heart. So it can happen that we get angry, we get pissed off, we get sad, we get distressed, we get upset, we can cry, because the heart will tell us what it wants to tell us. And this is where the image of the pebble in the water So we throw a stone in the water and we say, for example, you know, love yourself. It's a stone in the water. It isn't so easy. It can do things, and we can feel that the waves from the stone are a tsunami, actually. They're not just nice little waves. They're quite a tsunami of our woundedness comes up. And sometimes, and maybe without us wanting it or expecting it. And the point is that we can't expect unconditional love, ahava b'lit na'im, in a conditioned situation or a conditioned self. If we are within a self, me, that is conditioned, subject to conditions. But we can't expect unconditional love just to be there inside a conditioned self. Conditioned self means me with my memories, with my thoughts, with my patterns, with my usual sort of history, with all the wounds that I've suffered, etc., etc. That this self, me, when experiencing love, will experience it through the self, through me, who is wounded and suffering from history and biography and stories and so on. So we are experiencing love in a conditioned situation. The practice, as I'm saying, is slowly to go beyond that. The practice of all Dharma is to go beyond that. The practice of mindfulness of vipassana is to go beyond the story, the self story, and the practice of the Brahma Viharas, the heart practices, also to go beyond the story, the limited conditioned story. But so when we experience difficult emotions that might come up, or we experience things like boredom or tiredness, everything's fine, it's just experience. We can see that as kind of the resistance of love, which is potentially unlimited, hitting the self, which is limited. And that's the friction, the chikuch. And that can sometimes make the dramas that we might feel, the stress, the difficulties that we might feel that might come up. So love continually advances in a way against resistance. Our resistance is our blocks and our history and our biography and what happened to me as a child, and my father beat me as a child and it's still there, and the frustrations and difficulties that I had, and the struggle of my life, which is all written inside this biography somewhere, written in the body mind. And love comes and wants to push through that, to break through that, but love can't do it without, in a way, touching that stuff. It touches that stuff. Love is in the frame of me, so it's going to touch that stuff, and that's where we work. And so love needs, in a way, to overcome resistance, and that's when it begins to expand. And so there's a movement there of love overcoming resistance. So, for example, actually, like all movement, overcomes resistance. By the way, walking. If we don't have any friction, we can't walk. We will not walk. We will just not move. We move because of resistance. Hitnagdut. We move. There's a beautiful line from an American poet that said that says. Only an impeded stream sings. Which I will say it in Rak Zerem Mayim Sheyesh Machsomim Shir or Shara. I'll say Musica. In Zerem Mayim She'en Hitnagduyot En Avanim B'tocha Zerem has a Mayim Lo Se Musica. So it's So we experience love in it, all its forms of appreciation, kindness, friendliness, any of the forms, and it keeps meeting resistance. Resistance can be boredom, resistance can be negative emotion, resistance can be tiredness, resistance can be wanting to run away, resistance can be isheket, resistance can be just distraction. Just leave me alone with this stuff. Just don't want to know about all this love stuff. Can be, no. It can be many, many things, but it's all, but we keep going. Just like in Vipassana, we keep going with mindfulness, which overcomes resistance. And here we keep going with love, which overcomes resistance. So, okay, we love our resistance. Up comes boredom, shimum. We see it as hitnagdut. And we love it. We're kind to our boredom. Okay, boredom is coming up in the misgeret of framework of this self. I'm with you. I offer you my kindness. I melt you with my kindness. You're part of my life. I melt you. So the love is very much like water, which has a watery kind of feeling to it, that wears away stones. The stones are maybe our history, also tzalakot, right? The scars of our life. The water is, the love is melting them slowly, slowly. So this is the process where the love expands its boundary through melting blocks, through overcoming blocks, through overcoming resistance. And the resistance is what comes up for us in the me, in the self. Our experiences, moment by moment. And all the things work together. The wisdom, and the love work together always. So we when we practice with the phrases or without, with the kindness, we're also practicing silence. We're also practicing being aware. We're also giving space to ourselves. As we walk, we give space to ourselves. We're not obsessive about the phrases. In the context of this retreat, this is not a concentration practice on metta. Can be in the monasteries, they use the phrases as a mantra. I mentioned it yesterday. But we're talking about combining wisdom and love together. Wisdom meaning giving space to ourselves, giving understanding, feeling belonging to the world, feeling open, feeling quiet, watching what goes on. When we say the phrases, what's the vibration? What's the reaction? That's the wisdom. So they work together. There is a old quote that says, "If it looks like wisdom but has no love, it's not wisdom. If it looks like love and has no wisdom, it's not love." The two kind of need to be together. But love without wisdom is going to be blind. Wisdom without love is going to be hard, mechanical or intellectual. So they really work together, and that's what's happening with us. So we will be moving in this retreat, I should tell you. We are going to be addressing some of the other Brahmaviharas. Basically, tomorrow we're going to be a little bit paying attention to the metta or love going beyond ourselves, that is not just for us, although for us is the most important, because we tend to give ourselves a hard time. We tend to have in our own biography a lot of messages of non-love for ourselves, and so the healing here is to give a lot of attention to ourselves, to balance the voices in ourselves that say, we don't like ourselves. We are going, you know, yoreda latsmeinu, or we're not worth it enough, or shavim, or voices like this. We are trying to balance them with a lot of attention to metta for self. So we'll keep doing that tomorrow, but we'll begin to open it out, because, as I say, it's beyond the self. So we'll begin to open it out to others tomorrow. And we will be addressing compassion later on in the retreat. And maybe even forgiveness. And addressing, giving ourselves tools for what happens with difficulty and what we do with difficulty. What we feel, part of the wisdom is that whatever we feel is okay. There's something on, in a sense, we take the courage, takes a little bit of courage, that what comes up for us, whatever the heart mind offers us, karma, we're not in charge. Karma will do its thing, and we're okay with what comes up. And it's just try not to kind of sort of censor your censura with difficult things that might come up. Be with them, notice them, it's okay, it's part of the process, part of the practice. It's love meeting resistance. So don't go into a sort of a trap where, oh, I shouldn't feel boredom because we're talking so much about love. I shouldn't feel anger because we're talking. I shouldn't feel. No, it's exactly what needs to come up now. So just be aware that what needs to come up is coming up. Or reverse, if it doesn't come up, that's fine also. But we're not trying to kind of design our experience, we're just giving opportunities for things to be expressed, to be revealed. And so we keep irritating the heart and things are revealed. One of the most sort of difficult places to understand is, how is it that if I feel vulnerable, it's good for me? How is this practice, why is vulnerability helpful? It's very simple, that our vulnerability, the difficulties that might come up, the resistance that might come up, is a deep truth. It leaves us naked. We are naked in this world. We are born into this world, and we're busy with developing haganot, defenses, shirion, armor, kind of. And that's how we negotiate this life. The heart comes and tries to melt this. We go beyond when we go beyond our shirion, our armor. That's when we start going out from the self. And so our vulnerability is a place of deep honesty and truth. And we feel naked. It's maybe not very easy at times, but it's a place of opening. And in a way, hard for us to break out of the shell of ourselves without touching our vulnerability. Then the heart, the broken heart, is broken open. It's not just a broken heart, it's a broken open heart. The heart is broken open. So do again, the same message. Do appreciate, if things get difficult, appreciate that this is a truth that is important for us and is part of our liberation, is part of breaking open our closed heart. Things will come which, or may come, which show us our vulnerability, but that's fine and that's really helpful, because that way the love overcomes resistance, blocks, stuck places. Development of metta beyond us, beyond the self. Metta begins to, or loving kindness or friendliness begins to be unselective, has no address, specific address. So any time that you feel that your friendliness is to me, but also to the trees, but also to the earth, but also to my hands, but also to difficult places in me, but also to my neighbor, but also to, you know, any movement, and that in a way is where we're going, where friendliness is unmeasurable because it doesn't have a specific address. It's not friendly because someone is smiling at us. Friendly also to the person that doesn't smile at us. I remember one time I was stopped by a policeman in Akko. I was using my mobile phone and he pulled me off and he said, you know what you're doing? I said, sure. So I'm going to give you a doch. I said, fine. I said, it can't spoil my day, I said to him, and it shouldn't spoil your day either. He said, you won't say that when you see how much money I'm going to... Do you realize it's 1,000 shekel for using a mobile phone? I said, even that, no way it's going to spoil my day. And we both laughed, and it was just a joyful meeting with the policeman. You know? a loving kindness, a friendliness, just that sense of without boundary. And in the Jewish tradition, most traditions have a quality of friendliness or love beyond the boundaries. In the Jewish tradition, I think it's what's closest is chesed. And chesed in the Bible is there are images of chesed being like rain that doesn't just fall on good people because they're keeping mitzvot or whatever. It falls on everybody. Also in Arabic, barakah, it's a kind of traditional Arabic word for a kind of rain or blessing that falls on everybody. It's just available. And in the Buddhist tradition, it's something similar. It's also called rain. It's a golden rain. It's seen as a golden rain, which is, again, not specific. And you can generate, there's many practices in the old tradition where you generate metta or friendliness as a kind of a wave that doesn't have an address. It just goes everywhere. I used to do this a lot with groups and with myself, but sometimes the groups found it a little bit abstract. So it's giving metta is giving a vibration of kindness and friendliness to all directions, to to the front, to the back, to the side. I'll quote this to you maybe tomorrow. I'll read you how it's done in the tradition, but it's a bit abstract, and people used to say, well, I need an object and then I can feel love to somebody if I have an image in front of me, like a good friend, but I can't just stream love to an abstract kind of north, east, south and west. It just doesn't work for me, which I understand, but we'll do something like that. We will be doing some things like that together. But I understand, at least the beginning, we need something more concrete. But just to let you know that there is, when friendliness has no address and is just spread to everything that comes in front of you, every single thing that you meet in the outside world or the inside world you relate to with friendliness, then that has no boundary anymore. Then that's the immeasurable. It's just part of living. Brahma Vihara is living, it's abiding, living in the castle of the gods. It's living, it's daily life, it's how we live, how we are with everything that turns up. And that's the feeling of it, the sense of it without boundary. So I want to finish with a small story from the Talmud. And it's about a wise old man that was a wise rabbi, if you can call it, maybe tzaddik, who went away for 10 years into deep study and contemplation and prayer. And he came out after 10 years and walked on the beach. I think it's probably in Akko, actually, also, according to the story, with his son. And he was very, awakened and full of wisdom and so on. And he saw people struggling and doing, hard work and digging and fishing and the difficult life. And he said, "Oh, how ugly are the sons of Avraham, Bnei Avraham. Kama, kokak mukhwar." Bnei Avraham, that's the way he saw it. And his son said, "How can you say that after all your 10 years? Go back for another 10 years. You're not ready yet, because you haven't. You missed compassion. Your love and compassion. You missed it. Go back for 10 years." And he did. That's the story in the Talmud. So the bottom line is the wisdom and the compassion and the wisdom and the love, and need to be together. And that they are together in the way they are beyond our limits, beyond ourselves, beyond our story, beyond our history, beyond our patterns, blocks. And we keep expanding the boundaries. Thank you. So we'll take 10 minutes of silent sitting together.